namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter 22. Elements of Material Creation, text 37. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Sri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Manat karma mayam nirnam. Indriyai pancha viryutam. Lokal lokam prayatyanya. Atmatat anuvartate. Manakarma mayam ninam. Indriyai pancha viryutam. Loka lokam prayatyanya. Atmatat anuvartate. Manakarma mayam ninam. Indriyai pancha viryutam. Loka lokam prayatyanya. Atmatat anuvartate. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Mana, the mind, karma mayam, shaped by fruitive work, nrinam, of persons, indriyai, along with the senses, panchabhi, five, yutam, conjoined, lokat, from one world, lokam, to another world, priyati, travels, anya, separate, atma, the soul, tat, the mind, anuvartate, follows. Translation. Lord Krishna said, the material mind of men is shaped by the reactions of fruitive work. Along with the five senses, it travels from one material body to another. The spirit soul, although different from this mind, follows it. Om Gana Timidandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militanyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Sivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We are receiving directly from Lord Krishna very crucial information about how our life in this world is working. This is the topmost type of career information. For those of you who are goal-minded and task-oriented, this information is extremely important for your well-being. Without understanding this information, you'll have no clue of what's going on in life. Now, who would like to be known as being clueless? Being totally in the dark, without any trace of proper understanding. You can just visualize the fear that you'll feel walking on a street in total darkness. Maybe all the street lights have gone out during a power blackout. How afraid you'll feel in total darkness. But that is the nature of material existence. What is the illusion? We think we are seeing, even though we are totally blinded by our own conditioning. We're only imagining that we see light. So what is the light that we see? What's the illumination that we see? Prospects for karmic activity. That's the so-called light we see. I see the lights. People become happy when they encounter an opportunity for karmic expansion. Oh, I've begun to see the light. Happy days are here again. I see a future for karmic activity. Isn't it like that? You become enlivened. When it looks like the world is going to give you what you want. When it looks like there are going to be nice times, good times, recognition, fulfillment, reciprocation. Oh, how we beg for the material energy to reciprocate with us in the form of material bodies, material minds, material respect, prestige. We're practically crying out, begging to the illusory energy, reciprocate with me. Please fulfill me. It's amazing. We're not too proud to beg the material energy for fulfillment. But to beg Krishna for transcendental knowledge, to beg Krishna for his divine devotional service, no, that's too much. That's being fanatical. But to surrender completely to the material energy, that's normal. Everyone does it. Everyone can understand. And so what? That you get trampled and crushed from time to time. That's all part of life. And if you're a true battler, then you just accept it. Those who are weak, they run away from material existence. Extreme materialists think this about Vaishnav, devotees of the Lord. You've run away. You've abandoned the battle. How weak are you? They think that a real hero is someone in material existence who goes on trying even though you're always being smashed. That's their definition of a hero. Go on trying to squeeze that which has already been squeezed. It's like you go where they throw out the kitchen refuse and find some lemon that's been totally gouged and drained, and just the shell of the lemon, the rind of the lemon is left because, you know, they may be using a high-tech juicer which just crushes the lemons or the oranges completely, and you go and try to get some juice out of the rind. And after a while, because the endeavor is so useless, you begin to trick yourself. You start tasting the rind of the lemon or the orange and think, actually, this is kind of nice. Rather than admit the whole proposition is a failure. All right, I'm not getting any juice out of the lemon, but this rind, this is a different flavor I never had before. There's hope. Maybe I can start a business selling people lemon rinds and orange rinds to eat. Anyway, to make a profit. Anyway, to start a new fad. Anyway, to give hope for material satisfaction. Isn't that what people consider charity and love? Give me hope for material satisfaction. And if you can impart hope for material satisfaction to someone, you're known as a very respectable, dignified person. How charitable and philanthropic of you. How loving of you. You give hope for material existence. You give us that incentive to go on even though we're failing. You are the real hero, and you can make us into heroes. This is what's going on. We are in total darkness, but we imagine we're seeing. So Lord Krishna in this chapter is trying to give us crucial information so we can understand the cheating that's going on. I know it's a little tough for some of you to accept that the job of the material energy is to cheat you. Oh, it can't be that. That's negative. The job of the material energy is to give everyone a chance to fulfill themselves. The material energy will provide you with a partner who knows your every ache and pain, who knows your hopes, who knows your aspirations. The material energy will provide you money and respect if you just work hard enough and get the right boss. All these things the material energy is going to do for you. What else? Think about it. The material energy is going to give you something to study at school that will be very interesting. It'll be just what you always wanted to know. It'll satisfy your curiosity. It'll make your intellect grow. All these things the material energy will do for you. And even though you're getting old, the material energy will make it so you won't really feel it like the other old people. Even though you're getting sick, you'll be all right somehow. So in this way, you march on and on with an amazing determination. Who here can say they have no determination? Just look at what you're willing to undergo in material existence. All sorts of embarrassments, right? You just write it off very quickly. Well, you know, everyone gets to be a fool sometime, you know. Happens to the best of persons, you know. Things happen in this world, you know. It's not always under your control. But don't be hard on yourself. Just pick yourself up, get right back into it. That's the real hero. So Krishna, with this crucial information about the mind, is trying to save you lifetimes of problems. Krishna is trying to prevent you from imagining you're seeing light when actually you're in darkness. So there's different degrees of being in the darkness. Or, looked at another way, there's different degrees of getting some light in your life. Someone who is addicted to karmic activity. Karmic activity means I shall act and enjoy the results. I'm acting for my pleasure. And of course, your pleasure includes your extended self in terms of bodily relations, so on. So you're acting to benefit the material self and the extended material self. That is karmic activity. Someone who endeavors in that way is in darkness, no matter how eloquent, expert, or competent they may seem. Many of you work in the corporate world. And there you are seeing what appears to be so much expertise, so much talent. But it's all for naught. It's all in the darkness because the essential questions of life are being totally avoided. So total darkness means addiction to karmic activity. We should remember this because due to our contaminations, we think that karmic activity isn't so bad, right? It really can't be that bad. I mean, it's not that you're in the mafia or something. Although these days people consider working for the banks to be working for the mafia. But in any case, you think it's not so bad, the goals I have, right? Tell yourself that. It's really not so bad, the karmic goals I have. So, if we take this information that Krishna is giving us seriously, we begin to see the karmic darkness for what it is. Then what is being partially in the light? Being partially in the light means you recognize that there is a supreme source of all the energies. You recognize that there is a supreme consciousness, the original person. You decide, instead of just working blindly in a karmic way, I shall approach the supreme cause of all causes with my material desires. That's being partially in the darkness and partially in the light. If there is indeed a supreme source, if there is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, surely He'll agree to fulfill my material desires because that'll make me very enthusiastic in doing my service and puja for Him. So shouldn't the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, no doubt, he practically understands. If he just gives his devotees the material things they want, they'll really love him. We think in those business terms. That's our mentality, so we think certainly Krishna thinks like that. Because Krishna wants worship. Krishna wants puja. Krishna wants some offerings from time to time. So all we're asking in return for our believing in Krishna and our respecting Krishna, and yes, we even chant his name, all we expect is that he fulfills our material desires. That's good for him and good for us. Yes. The peace formula. Of course, the peace formula given in Bhagavad Gita is a little different. Bhoktaram yagatapasam sarvaloka maheshram. One who recognizes that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer of all austerities, all sacrifices, all endeavors. He's the Lord of all living entities. Suradam sarvabhutanam. He's the friend of everyone. Now, if Krishna is Suradam sarvabhutanam, he's the friend of everyone, he should befriend your desires, right? Just like in the seventh canto, it is stated that in the guru-disciple relationship, the disciple has a firm attitude of friendship with the guru. Now, what does that mean? Does it mean that when you see your guru Dave, you give him a pat on the back? And, hey, mate! You know, Shastra says, you know, attitude of firm friendships. No. It's a different understanding of friendship. It means you take the mission, the instructions of the spiritual master as your life and soul. You befriend the instructions. You befriend the mission of the spiritual master. And that is what, that's how you show your firm friendship. Not by casual behavior. But by intimacy with the Vani. It takes a while in devotional service to understand the Vani is more intense intimacy than the Vapu, than the physical association. As we progress in bhakti, indeed we find that out. That physical association with the spiritual master cannot compare in terms of intensity with associating with his instructions. That's something to be realized. Otherwise, what's the use of spiritual life? If physical proximity and physical association is the ultimate, that means that the physical reality is the supreme reality. Of course, when the physical reality is engaged in Krishna's service, connected to Krishna, it becomes spiritualized. You know about the iron rod in the fire. Acts just like fire, even though it's an iron rod. Still, the spiritual energy is superior, and spiritual association is superior. So the way Krishna has made the system is that the Vani, the instructions, the mission of the spiritual master gives more intense connection. Why is that? Once again, it's true. Anything material engaged in Krishna's service becomes spiritualized. That's why the highly advanced devotee doesn't see a difference between matter and spirit. They're all Krishna's energies. They're all for serving Krishna. But generally, there's a problem with physical things, even when engaged in Krishna's service. They appear and they disappear. So if you base your relationship with spiritual personalities just on physical appearance, well, sometimes you'll have it, sometimes you won't. So the intelligent devotee plays for keeps. The intelligent devotee wants the constant and most intense form of association. And that comes through instruction, the vani.
This is something to be understood.
Krishna is giving his instruction here. He's giving you insight. And that insight that Krishna is giving you is far more valuable than any artificial light in the darkness of material existence. It's even far more valuable than you're hoping Krishna will fulfill your material desires. Krishna would rather you see. He'd rather you take the blinders off and see. And we're saying, no, don't worry about whether I see or not. Just fulfill these material desires. Be a nice Krishna. Be a nice Bhagavan. But Krishna wants you to see. But we're very determined to accept partial light in the darkness. I will admit you exist, Krishna, but just fulfill my material desires. Now, how do you get totally into the light? By becoming absorbed in devotional service for Krishna's pleasure. Then you are in complete daylight. You're actually seeing. The intelligent devotee is always mindful of service opportunities. We never think that we are serving Krishna well enough. We're always trying to sharpen our game. That means we're always trying to perfect our love. The reality of engagement in devotional service means you're always trying to perfect your love. You're always thinking, I'm not serving Krishna well enough. There are always things I can do better. And as I've explained before, the life of a devotee is one of constant revelation. So much so that you can even look back just 1 year ago and think, I didn't know anything last year. Amazing, some of the things I did last year and thought they were intelligent. This is the luxury of a devotee, that even a short time passes, a half year, 1 year, and you can actually see that you're realization, your illumination's increasing, so much so that you wonder, what was I thinking last year? How crude I was, how spiritually unsophisticated. This is luxury, this is opulence, this is wealth. Krishna wants that we come completely into the light. So he's giving you information, what is causing the problem. The material mind is shaped by the reactions of karmic activity. So in other words, it's not an innocent thing to engage in karmic activity. Oh, all I just want is to get a nice job. I just want to study nice things at the university. I just want to go to some nice parties. And I want respect from others. And that's all. But while you're doing those things, you're shaping your material mind. And that material mind will come back on you and dominate you. So you're shaping your own prison. Oh, that sounds negative, doesn't it? I'm just trying to be me. I mean, everyone else is acting like this. Why do devotees have to be different? I got it. Wouldn't it be so much easier to help people be Krishna conscious if we just stopped talking about these things? Whatever you believe will come true. Just desire, it'll be yours. How about that? The power of magical thinking. You're walking down the street and you're thinking, oh, I'd really like a strawberry ice cream cone. And out of nowhere, someone appears in front of you and offers you a strawberry ice cream cone. Isn't that wonderful? This is the power of positive thinking. Many people, they think this is very fascinating. But Krishna has better gifts to give. He's teaching you what the material mind is doing. You shape it by your karmic activity, and that means you're shaping your own mental prison. So, the mind has its companions. It has the five senses. Krishna also explains this in Bhagavad Gita, that the mind is grouped with senses. So don't think of just your mind as being something on its own that's always thinking or changing plans for material enjoyment. We explained last week the cycle. First mistake, you identify with the body and mind as the self. And that, remember, opens the door for the material mind to be surcharged with the mode of passion, because you have identified with the body and mind as the self. Once the door is open for the mode of passion, that means suffering. The mode of passion, what is it all about? It's all about intense longing and then frustration, because what you're longing for never satisfies you. It's even more frustrating because sometimes you think you've got it, right? And then it just eludes your grasp. Isn't it a horrible feeling? I almost had it. It was working for a while. You can remember situations you've been in like that? It was happening. It was working. It was all green lights for a while. Right? And then slam. Oh, it's such a bitter feeling, isn't it? You cry. You moan. You lament. You search out friends to console you. Just pick yourself up off the floor, get back in there, keep trying. That's what we're all doing. It's a horrible process when you think about it. So, this material mind is accompanied by the senses. And then what does the whole package do, the mind and the senses? It travels from one material body to another. The senses also have a subtle equivalent. Our life is not just composed of material senses. The senses have subtle equivalents. So the mind travels with all that from one material body to another. In this way, if we think about it, we won't take our mind so seriously and we'll understand all of its entourage. So then Krishna explains, the spirit soul, although different from this mind, follows it. Like this drama that devotees here sometimes do. What is it called? Me and My Mind. So, the mind and me. It's more precise English. So, the spirit soul is following the mind. That shouldn't happen. How do you break up this problematic relationship? Those of you who know something about psychology, you may know the term a codependent relationship. Anyone know that term? Yes? You've seen persons in codependent relationships? That even though they're suffering in that relationship, they can't give it up. This is called codependency in psychological terms. They even go to someone and, oh, I can't take it anymore. I'm going to get out of this relationship. And the person sympathized with them. Yes, yes, you should get out of the relationship. Look, you know, you're suffering, you're being beaten, you're being emotionally abused. We'll help you get out of it. And then a few months later, the person crawls right back into it and even turns upon those who advised and tried to help. It's actually all because of you that our relationship was having problems. Have you ever? Yeah, you just need that to happen to you one time as an advisor to such a person, and you never do it again. So, psychological codependency means even though the relationship is abusive, even though you're suffering, still you go on. Because you can't see how I'd have a future outside of this relationship. So even though I'm being battered and abused, you know, I just have to go on. And you try to get out of it sometimes, and then you just crawl right back into it. So that is the situation with our mind. It's abusing us. It's putting us through so many ordeals. It's pushing us to engage in so much karmic activity, but we can't give the relationship up. Why? Because we don't know anything better. This is the tragedy of material existence. We don't know anything better. Therefore, we have the necessity of the world of bhakti and the community of the bhakti yogis. They are demonstrating The community demonstrates there is a spiritual reality. Watch, participate, engage your mind and senses. In a wonderful world of spiritual activities, you'll see another side. You'll taste another side. You'll smell another side. And in this way, you'll give up your destructive, codependent relationship with the material mind. One has to be humble, of course, to admit I'm being abused by my own mind. My mind is dragging me here and there. Meanwhile, while your mind is dragging you here and there and causing you to engage in fruitive activity, karmic activity, the activities you're performing further shape your mind. So it's just a loop. The mind is causing you to engage in karmic activity. Then those karmic activities feed back into the mind and shape it. And then the mind feeds you into more karmic activities. What a deadly relationship. This is the question we pointed out last week that Uddhava asked Krishna. Since the sense objects are always embedded in the mind, and the mind is embedded in sense objects, how can there ever be enlightenment? How can there ever be self-realization? How to break up this love affair? The mind runs towards the sense objects. The sense objects, as desire, enter the mind. It just goes on and on and on, this loop. So Krishna's advice is you have to jump above this loop. Go to another level. Take your life to another level. Krishna says, think of me, engage in my service. Then you're outside of this deadly loop. Gradually a devotee begins to realize the luxury, the freedom of devotional service. As the years roll by, you're just amazed. I actually, by Krishna's grace, did this. I got out of the material energy. But don't become overly confident, because you are still operating in the material world. So you always have to watch your back. You always have to be careful, because you are walking in a dangerous area, material existence. Now, sometimes we'll think it's going to be very unenlivening to always watch your back and be careful. But actually, that's a sign of love. Just like in a relationship, a proper relationship between husband and wife, the husband is careful at work not to be allured by other women. Why? It's a manifestation of his love for his wife. I must be true. I'll be true. She's trusting me. She's giving me my emotional nourishment. I will value that relationship. So that being careful is a sign of love. I don't want to jeopardize this relationship. I don't want to let someone down. So it's not that simply out of fear, painful fear, that you restrain yourself from being unfaithful. You're doing it actually out of love. It's part of the loving experience that you watch yourself. So similarly for a devotee, since devotional service is the real love, it's not dependent on the body and its changes. In devotional service, out of love for Krishna, you are careful. Not that you're always trembling in fear, oh no. It is intelligent to be fearful of Maya, but that intelligent fear of Maya is based on love. It's a manifestation of love. And we'll begin to understand that as the years in devotional service go by. We want to protect our bhakti lata, our creeper of devotional service. As we become attached to devotional service, chanting the holy name, associating with devotees, we want to protect that. That's intelligence. being careful in the material world means intelligence. Your understanding, it's a world of illusion. As the years go by, we become so thankful for devotional service. Even the devotees that you see every day and start to take, you become familiar with them. Oh, such and such Prabhu. I've been seeing him for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. When's he ever going to change? We always think, when are the other devotees going to change? But gradually, you begin to appreciate devotees in all their variegatedness. It does happen. It can happen. You have to pray to Krishna for that insight. It takes work. But this is the real career. Because as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, if you've actually seen the truth, then you understand that all living entities are in him and they're his. So yes, we want to see the truth. Being Krishna conscious means being conscious of Krishna's parts and parcels. We're always feeling the need for improvement in that department. So just think of the luxury of devotional service. It's beyond mere relief. Elsewhere in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, it's explained that devotional service gives pleasure, nourishment, and relief from material pangs. Just as when you're eating, you get nourishment, you get satisfaction, and you get relief from hunger. As you eat food, if you're hungry, you get satisfaction. If the food is healthy, it nourishes you, and your hunger twinges go away. Of course, the example doesn't completely apply to devotional service because you can only eat so much. And after a while, you're not hungry anymore and you lose your motivation to eat more. Of course, here at Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir, some of the cooks are so devastating that even though you've eaten enough, you just hope, oh, can I just fit in one more mouthful? Oh, Krishna, help my stomach to expand. Right? But materially speaking, once you've eaten a certain amount, you can't eat anymore. And in fact, you lose your taste for eating anymore. But devotional service is an endless appetite. Material examples, metaphors, they cannot correspond in every way to the reality, the spiritual reality. But if there are some points that agree, then you can use such a metaphor. That is the technique the Shastra uses. So, engaging in devotional service gives you pleasure. It's a great mystery how simply by serving Krishna and not worrying about yourself, you taste the highest pleasure without even worrying about it. And devotional service nourishes you. It gives you the spiritual strength to engage in more devotional service. And devotional service gives relief from material pangs. What is that material pang of suffering? It's due to material desire. Can you remember, some of you, how you were tortured before by material desires? It's horrible, isn't it? It's like you're a fish writhing on a hook. You're just, material life means you're just left wide open to be just raised by material desires. The pain of wanting. And the greater pain of even if you get what you want, you're still not satisfied. You're frustrated. Oh, It's a horror. It's a holocaust. The devotional service gives you relief from material desires. Just like when you eat food, your hunger pangs go away. So this is Krishna's program for what to do with the mind. Instead of shaping the mind by karmic activity, you shape the mind by devotional service. Then the mind can become so elevated. It works amazingly in Krishna consciousness. Lord Chaitanya demonstrates the supreme perfection of the mind. He was trying to go to Vrindavan, but he never made it to Vrindavan. He had to turn back. In Bengal, he turned back and went to Jagannath Puri. When he returned, his associates in Puri, of course, were so happy. And Lord Chaitanya explained that in Ramkeli, I met Sanatan Goswami, Rupa Goswami, and Sanatan told me that actually it's not very appropriate to go to Vrindavan surrounded by thousands. Because wherever Lord Chaitanya was going in Bengal, thousands upon thousands of persons would accompany him everywhere. So Sanatan told him, actually, to go to Vrindavan, once you go alone or at most with a couple of persons. So Lord Chaitanya said, at first I didn't take it seriously what he said. But then I began to think, he's right. So in this way, Lord Chaitanya is showing that even he takes consultation of the Vaishnavas. He's teaching us. At first I thought, I shouldn't take it so seriously. Mahaprabhu says that. But then later, actually, he's got a point there. We do that sometimes, don't we? A devotee tells us something, what does he know? Yeah, he's been the same for 20 years. Everyone knows him. No one takes him seriously. But then later, actually, could be a point there. Could be some truth there. So Lord Chaitanya demonstrates that just to show us. He's a supreme bhakti teacher. He shows us how to take advice, how to take pointers. So he was explaining this to the devotees in Puri. And then he got to the real reason, which is based on pure love, pure affection. He says, actually, the real reason I couldn't go to Vrindavan was because Gadadhar Pandit was so brokenhearted upon my departure, I couldn't go. When Gadadhar Pandit heard that, he was so happy. And he told Lord Chaitanya, actually, the truth is, in other words, I appreciate what you're saying, that you couldn't go to Vrindavan because of me and you returned because of me. But the truth is, wherever your mind is, that is Vrindavan. Mora mana Vrindavana. Remember during the Rath Yatra in Puri, Lord Chaitanya is dancing, absorbed in the mood of Srimati Radharani, bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan. So, his mind is Vrindavan. In Lord Chaitanya's mind, the pastimes of Lord Krishna are constantly taking place. So Gadadhar Pandit reminded Lord Chaitanya, actually, you have no need to go to Vrindavan. Your mind is Vrindavan. But he said, you still try to do it to set an example for the ordinary devotee. That yes, they should aspire to go to Vrindavan. In the purport of those verses, Prabhupada takes the opportunity to instruct us that we should not go to Vrindavan just for material fame or with a material mentality or for getting some kind of prestige, spiritual prestige amongst the society of devotees. I am going to Vrindavan. Just see the platform I'm on. Prabhu, have you been to Vrindavan? Who didn't go to Vrindavan in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes? Srubdamadar never went. Gadadhar Pandit never went. Haridas Thakur never went. Ramananda Roy never went. A whole list of intimate devotees of Mahaprabhu, there's no history of them. Of their going to Vrindavan. Not that, of course, we shouldn't go to Vrindavan, but the point, Prabhupada makes that point to let us know that we should be very careful about our doing things, even going to Vrindavan. We should do it for Krishna's pleasure, with pure motivation. if we try to derive some false sense of spiritual advancement just because I've been to Vrindavan, I must be advanced. we're humbled to understand that even these greatest associates of Lord Chaitanya never went to Vrindavan. But the point is, wherever they were, that is Vrindavan. And Mahaprabhu demonstrates the ultimate of that, Moramana Vrindavana. In his mind, the pastimes of Radha and Krishna were constantly going on. So Gadadhar Pandit pointed that out to Lord Chaitanya. There's no need for you to go to Vrindavan, yet you're trying to do it to set an example for the ordinary devotees. Then Gadadhar Pandit invited Lord Chaitanya for lunch. And the lunch he provided for Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya's relishing of that lunch, Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami says it's indescribable. So Chaitanya Charitamrita presents to us the perfect relationships amongst devotees. And Lord Chaitanya, he is the supreme devotee. So in this way, we get a crystal clear vision of the activities of the spiritual world. All right, we'll stop here. Any questions? Okay. No questions. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.